hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of the State of Nebraska is now open for the transaction of business. Draw nigh all ye having business with this honorable court, and ye shall be heard. God save the state of Nebraska and this honorable court.
Thank you very much. If anyone is standing, you may be seated. And good morning to everyone. Our first case is Mercer versus North Central Services, Inc. AMS, Inc. versus North Central Service, Inc. Columbia National Insurance Company versus Metropolitan Utilities District. And Vel Eve, Inc. versus North Central Services, Inc. These cases have all been consolidated for oral arguments. We have 20 minutes per side allocated. We will start by introducing members of the court. I'm Mike Havikin, the Chief Justice, and by order of seniority as to membership on the court, the other members of the court will introduce themselves.
Good morning. I'm Lindsay Miller Lerman. Thank you.
Good morning, William Castle.
Good morning, Stephanie Stacy.
Jeff Funk. Good morning.
Jonathan Papik.
John Friedenberg.
Thank you very much. And counsel, Mr. Coyle, are you with us here today? We can't hear you, Mr. Coyle. You're going to have to unmute.
Okay, I'll try that again. Good morning to you all. Can you hear me, Your Honor?
Now we can hear you. Yes, thank you.
Okay, very well.
And Mr. Story, are you with us this morning?
I am, Chief Justice.
Thank you very much. And Mr. White, are you here?
I am, Your Honor.
Do we have anybody else, any other counsel on today? Counsel for Appalachians, I understand that you have agreed to divide your time. Mr. Story, can you tell us how you're going to do that?
Yes, Your Honor. I will proceed with the first 13 minutes, followed by Tom White for the remaining seven.
And are you reserving any time for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor.
Oops, I'm sorry. Yes,
you're the police. So yes.
You don't have to reserve any time for rebuttal. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, does anybody have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
Very good. Mr. Coyle, then, again, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
Well, thank you, Honor, and may it please the court. By way of introduction, again, my name is Michael Coyle. I represent the appellant, the Metropolitan Utilities District. We are here today on an interlocutory appeal from a decision of the Douglas County District Court that overruled a series of motions for summary judgment in regard to a number of lawsuits that were filed in Douglas County following an explosion and fire in the old market on January 9th of 2016, which was caused as a result of an underground directional boring machine striking a marked underground gas line. It is our position that the plaintiff's claims were precluded by Tort Claims Act exceptions, and the Douglas County District Court lacked subject matter jurisdiction for those lawsuits. So why are we here? We're asking today for a reversal of the order of the Douglas County District Court, and we're further asking this court that all these lawsuits be dismissed with prejudice. Now, as far as these lawsuits are concerned, there are what I would describe as three buckets of claims, and I'd like to address each one of those separately. There's a whole series of lawsuits, about 15. But the first bucket of claims would be negligent policy claims, I would describe as. The second bucket of claims would be criticisms of how we marked our gas lines. And the third bucket of claims would be post-fire, post-explosion claims against the Metropolitan Utilities District. Now, I'd like to address each one of those three buckets individually, and I want to start off with what's...
I'm having trouble hearing you.
I think that I want to start off with the first bucket of claims, and that would be what I would call the negligent policy claims. And I think it's really... we've spent 3 years trying to figure out what these claims are, but they're essentially, we didn't train, we didn't supervise, we should have had different procedures, we should have had different policies on how we responded to a gas emergency. Now, I think that these could be described as would have, could have, should have claims. And I think it's black letter law from this court that those claims are barred by the discretionary function exception. And in fact, in Lambert versus the Lincoln Public Schools, this court just visited that issue a couple of months ago. They're barred by the discretionary function. And I think in reality, if you look at all the briefs that have been filed in this case, they really weren't briefed. It really wasn't disputed. And so we're going to ask that as an initial matter that you enter an order that all those claims are barred. Now, the second bucket of claims is what I'm going to call negligent marking claims. And essentially, let's talk about what the challenged action is. And when we're doing an analysis here on these negligent marking claims, which we believe are barred by the discretionary function, there's really a three-step analysis that we have to go into. Normally it's two, in this case it's three. So first thing that we have to look at is was the challenged action a matter of choice for our employees? The second is the challenge action here is, and what they're disputing is how we marked our gas lines. Now, Your Honors, it is undisputed in this case that we marked our gas line, our underground gas line in the old market with paint. But the key here is, and the issue's always been in this case is, were we negligent for using yellow painted dots to mark those lines? So here's the issue.
Mr. Coyle, is there also an issue about whether or not one of your employees marked anything?
Your Honor, I, and in answer to that question, I believe the answer to that question is no. I think it was undisputed that we marked. I think that the dispute is the size and the nature of the marks. So my answer to that question would be no. But in response to the initial inquiry is, did we have discretion in how we marked the lines? And the answer is yes. Now, where the Douglas County District Court got off track here, I believe, is they made a fundamental mistake in interpreting the one-call statute. Now, if you look at the appellee's briefs in this case, they say two things. We didn't have discretion to respond to tickets, and we didn't have discretion to mark lines. And we agree with that. We don't dispute that we needed to respond to a ticket and mark the line. But the one call statute doesn't take away our discretion. It provides us with discretion. I'm going to show you Exhibit 47 from the transcript. This is a copy of the statute. Now, if you look at the one call statute, it says, let's go back to the one call statute. This is from the locating manual. If you look at the one call statute, it says that we have basically four ways to mark an underground: stakes, flags, paint, or any other clearly identifiable marking or reference point. So what does that mean? There's three things here. We can mark with stakes, flags, or paint, or any other clearly identifiable marking. Why is that important? Because as a matter of law, the legislature has determined that stakes, flags, or paint are clearly identifiable markings. The statute is 100% silent on how big those marks are to be, what those marks are to look like, but it defines as a matter of law that if you use one of those three things, then they're clearly identifiable. That's what we did. There isn't a word in this statute about how those marks are supposed to look, their size, their length. And I think what happened here is the Douglas County District Court looked at the word shall, got hung up on that, said, well, there's no discretion. But the statute provides us with discretion to use
Is the way in which the marks are made a policy-making decision or an operational decision?
Well, I think in this case that it is an operational decision, Judge Papik, and I'll tell you why. Because before I get off the statute, I want to look at our internal policy. We have a locating manual that all of our locators are obligated to use. And this is in the record as exhibit number 20. This is our locating manual. And to answer your question, Judge Papik, I want to go to where it talks about this. It says when you're using paint, it should be made so the facility is clearly marked. And remember, the statute's already defined that using paint is clearly marking. It's but does not greatly disturb the owner's property. So this is not a ministerial decision of a locator out there just doing something. What we have here is this is an operational decision that has come down from the company. And here's the reason. The Metropolitan Utilities District is in the biggest metropolitan area in the state of Nebraska. We're not going to be putting 18 inches of yellow paint on a brand new stamped driveway, a patio, a sidewalk. We give our locators the discretion, depending on where they are, as to the size and the type of the mark. As long as they use paint, they're complying with both our internal policy as well as the statute. And the significance here is in the Williams versus the City of Lincoln case, it must be presumed that our agents are using operational company guidelines when they're following company policies. And that's exactly what happened in this case. And when Mr. Sacco, our locator, got in front of M's Pub, when he marked that line, it was basically directly going into the front of the restaurant. Now, he put yellow dots. They're used every day. We've been using them for
I don't know if you and I are using operational in the same sense. I mean, I'm a little confused by your acknowledgement that it is operational. Our case law says that the discretionary function exception does not extend to the exercise of discretionary acts at an operational level where there's no room for policy judgment.
Well, Your Honor, and I think
where's the policy judgment here?
I just showed you our locator's manual. Our locator's manual, the policy from the senior management at the Metropolitan Utilities District gives our locators the discretion on the size and type of the mark. And that's because we don't want paint this long on people's patios. They're given the discretion. It's got to be clearly marked. But it is a policy from the highest level that in the biggest metropolitan area in Omaha, we're going to give our locators the discretion on how big those marks are to be. Now,
is it possible, which would be contrary to your argument, to say that the policy is, the larger policy is, there shall be markings. You can have a couple of tools, but then when you're in the field, there is, at the, quote, operational level, opportunity for the individual doing the operation to decide if the dots are going to have a five-inch diameter or a seven-inch diameter, depending on the as-is situation.
Well, I think that's...
That would be not a policy decision. The policy is make dots. Now you get out in the field, and then the as-is situation, the guys in the field or gals in the field will say how big the dots should be. Wouldn't that be operational? Thank you.
Well, and I think Judge Miller-Lerman and Judge Papik, in response to your question, is I think that the policy is just that our locators are given the discretion, depending on the situation, as to the size and type of the mark. The statute is silent. And interestingly enough, this entire lawsuit rolled out of an observation by the state fire marshal that these were marked with dots. The law has since been changed. Dots are, the fire marshal has specifically endorsed the use of dots. Now it's changed. But prior to that time, dots have been used consistently. But here, it is a policy of the district in the metropolitan area to give our locators the discretion as to the size of the marks. So we've satisfied the second part. And I hope I answered your question, Judge Papik. Now,
I beg your pardon. Are you saying that if something were at the policy level, i.e. discretionary, that could be assigned and therefore be converted into operational?
Well, Your Honor, I think that in this case here, the policy from the Metropolitan Utilities District in our locator's manual, and consistent with the one-call statutory scheme, that when they get into the field, as long as they use paint flags or stakes, that they have the discretion as to the type of those three things to use, and that's what they used here. Now, the third analysis here is Lemke versus the Metropolitan Utilities District, and that is a non-discretionary duty to warn of a dangerous condition that a governmental agency might have knowledge of that somebody out in the public would not have knowledge of. And Judge Burns determined that there's a duty to warn, but here that's really a red herring, because the one call statute has preempted, as far as underground utility lines for a political subdivision such as MUD or OPPD, the one call statute is completely self-contained as to how we warn the public, contractors, and individuals of lines in the ground. That's our duty. We warned here, we marked the line. How the individual subcontractor or underground directional boring company, that's completely out of our control. But in this case, Lemke versus the Metropolitan Utilities District is not applicable in this case, because when it comes to those lines in the ground, it's been preempted by the one call statute. Now,
has this court ever said that the one call statute preempted the common law duty, if you will, embodied in Lemke?
Your Honor, to date, this court has not made that decision. It was presented. You've had this case in front of you before, but you didn't specifically rule on it. However, when it comes to underground utility lines that are operated by political subdivisions such as OPPD and MUD, the one call statute is completely self-contained. It gives you the time, the dates, the type of markings to use, and it even describes a remedy. For example, there's strict liability. So, Your Honor, in this case, the analysis of Lemke versus the Metropolitan Utilities District is simply inapplicable to this case, because it's been preempted by the statute. Now, that doesn't mean it wouldn't be applicable to some other type of case, but as far as underground utilities, it's been preempted by the one-call statutory scheme. That brings me to the third bucket of claims, which should have been dismissed for lack of subject matter jurisdiction, and that's the post-fire type emergency claims. Now, Your Honor, this is again a woulda, coulda, shoulda. There's an explosion, a gas fire in the old market. The firefighters told our crew to shut off the gas from 11th Street to 12th Street, from the alley to Howard, and that's what they did. There are literally all of these different meters, all of these different gas lines needed to be shut off, and they want to be critical of us, of how long it took us to get the gas shut off. But again, these are classic claims that are barred by the Political Subdivisions Tort Claims Act. Now, the Federal Tort Claim Act cases are helpful when considering this analysis. I would compare this, and the cases we cited in our brief are, to a prison riot, where somebody says, hey, you should have got here sooner. The cases that have identified criticism of emergency responders have found that response time in emergencies is inherently discretionary as a matter of law. And I do not believe it would apply to firefighters, paramedics, anybody who's responding to an emergency. And this is not any routine emergency. This is an explosion and fire, one of the biggest that's ever been in the Omaha metropolitan area. So we believe that claim
hypothetically
been dismissed.
Hypothetically, yes, Mr. Coyle, if you had waited till, let's say, 24 hours, would that be beyond the emergency? Would that be some kind of material dispute of fact?
Well, and you see, Your Honor, that is exactly what the Fourth Circuit case that we cited in our brief said. It says emergency response time is inherently discretionary
except in the case where somebody went to lunch or went to have a cup of coffee or went stop by to see their girlfriend. None of those facts are in existence in this case, and therefore that claim should have been barred. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
I know you're trying to reserve time. Let me ask, if I may, just one question. I think you're referring to the Buchanan case for the prison riot from the Fifth Circuit. Is that correct?
Well, I think the case that we cited, Judge Lerman, was from the Fourth Circuit.
I beg your pardon. I think that in the prison cases, and I don't want to go too far insofar as some of the briefs refer to Wyszynski, which is on a future call arising from the Tecumseh situation. But I think that in those cases, rather than a one-call statute, there were protocols which in and of themselves had a breadth of response. They specifically said to the folks on the ground, do your best, assess the situation. So I'm trying to discern whether or not you think that's a perfect analogy.
Well, I think that the reason I cite those cases is because we're talking about an incredible emergency here. And I think to be a Monday morning quarterback for a court of law to sit in judgment for somebody to responding to an explosion and shutting down gas on a huge area, I think that those cases should be fatal by the discretionary function. So I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, and I hope I answered your question.
Thank you. Yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Coyle. Mr. Story, good morning again to you.
Good morning.
You may proceed.
Hey, please the court. My name is Mike Story, and today Tom White and I have been designated to speak on behalf of all of the appellees in this consolidated appeal. I intend to offer argument for 13 minutes before leaving the remaining time to Mr. White. This case is not about dots versus lines.
Mr. Story, you're going to have to keep track of that 13 minutes.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. This case is about whether MUD had a duty to warn the excavators of the underground gas line's existence. The legislature has spoken by passing the Nebraska One Call Act, Section 76-2323, which requires MUD to warn excavators upon request. The legislation is consistent with this court's 1993 ruling in Lemke, in which this court held that MUD has a duty to warn its customers of the dangers of natural gas. MUD's duty to warn of the existence of the underground utilities is non-discretionary. Therefore, under Lemke and the statute, the discretionary function exemption is inapplicable as a matter of law.
Simply put, do you think that the statute, the one-call statute, preempts Lemke?
No, it does not preempt Lemke. It informs Lemke. The statute creates a duty, and that duty is what Lemke, in Lemke, this court found a duty. It created a duty, or it found a duty in the common law with regard to a connector that MUD arguably didn't own or install. The statute works to prove that that duty exists. The Nebraska legislature has made it very clear, as has all the legislatures in this country, that when a utility operator or owner is requested to locate those underground utilities, that it must do so. And 76-23 provides no discretion to MUD to do anything other than to warn. And under Lemke, this court's analysis is clear. When there is a non-discretionary duty to warn, and we look at that 76-23-23, the discretionary function exemption simply doesn't apply. It does not matter whether MUD thinks that it can override the statute and create exemptions to what the state legislature said, because it has a non-discretionary duty under the common law to do so.
I understood Mr. Coyle to concede that MUD has a duty to mark the lines. I understand his argument to be that it has discretion as to how it carries that out under the statute and under its own policies. Could you respond to that argument?
Yes, Your Honor. The discretion is not found in 76-23-23. I would note that in all of the cases, if the vast majority, if not all the cases before this court in which the discretionary function exemption was addressed, the statute expressly reserved discretion to the state actor. So it either says it will be based upon policy decisions, judgment, or it uses the word discretion. Here, 76-23-23 does not give that discretion. And MUD's own locate manual can't override what the state legislature has said. Now,
would you agree that MUD has discretion as to what type of markings it makes and the way in which it makes those markings?
Yes, and that's considered operational discretion, and that ties, Justice Papik, into your question before. There is always going to be discretion at some level of regarding a choice to be made, but discretionary is a legal term. It's not just choice, but it requires that choice to be funded or be based in policy making. And as this court has said, it's typically inapplicable to operational level employees. Just recently, this court in Lambert set forth what are typically discretionary functions. And those include things such as the initiation of programs and activities, establishment of plans and schedules, and judgmental decisions within a broad regulatory framework with lacking specific standards. Deciding to place two small yellow dots on the concrete is not policymaking. And it's not policymaking for a lot of reasons, but primarily it's Mr. Sacco, who is at the operational level, is making that decision. Failing to turn off the gas in a timely manner is not the establishment of plans and schedules. Neither choice was legitimate social or economic policy consideration, and both were made by operational employees. And we have to remember, the marking itself is not the only negligent act. MUD failed to respond to the locate request as required by 762323. And on two occasions, on December 10th, 2015, there is a factual dispute as to whether Sacco actually went out that day and marked it. The factual dispute is created by Arnie Bates, who is the state fire marshal who issued the report after investigation, and he concluded that the yellow dots, based on their look and wear, were placed at a time well before December 10th. And all we have to do is look at the picture, comparing the blue line to the yellow dots, and since this is a summary judgment motion, all reasonable inferences are given to the appellees. So Sacco and MUD violated its statutory duty on December 10th. It also violated its statutory duty to mark on January 4, 2006, when Mr. Janikowski readily admits that he did not remark or refresh the marks in front of M's Pub, and he simply drove by at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Both of those acts, which are not addressed by MUD in their brief, are independent reasons to remand this case for trial. Had either gentleman went to the site and refreshed as required by the one-call statute, they would have realized, and there's a reasonable inference to assume they would have, that the two marks did not convey to the markers or to the excavators the existence of that natural gas.
How would you describe the second locate, the refresh? Has that got the same breadth of choice as Sacco had?
No, I don't think he has the same choice. I mean, he's required to do it. And he is required to go, and that was Janikowski and Sacco. They're required to go to the site, and they're required to repaint and to make sure that those lines are or dots are as clear as they were the day they were laid down. And neither gentleman completed that. And it's undisputed in this case that those two yellow dots were not highly visible. Every non-MUD witness agrees that those dots did not clearly convey the existence of the underground utilities.
And I guess going back to my question, if Sacco's quote duty was to use paint in an appropriate fashion to locate, and thereafter Jankowski's quote duty was to refresh, those are different activities, are they not? And
yes.
Did each of those get performed in a manner that was, I'll just say, proper, or is there a factual dispute as to either of those activities?
Yes, there is a factual dispute as to both of those activities, and we're on a motion for summary judgment as to whether those were proper. Now, I don't believe there's a factual dispute that Janikowski did not do what he was supposed to do under the statute. I mean, he all but admits it in his deposition that he was required to put boots on the ground and to go down there and actually refresh those marks. And so for that reason alone, it should be remanded for trial. But we must also remember that the whole purpose of this once call statute is it's spoken by the legislature is to ensure that these markings properly advise the excavators of the existence. That is the first sentence in the one call statute. And the law is not foolish. The whole purpose of the statute is to make sure and to prevent accidental strikes. And this court has said before that these entities such as MUD are to be treated as private entities. And private entities such as are usually do these markings. And an insufficient marking is something that this court has the ability to review. It's an act of negligence. It's not an act of discretion. And when the statute removed that discretion from MUD, it does not matter what MUD's policy reasons or excuses were for insufficiently marking it. It is to be reviewed by the trier of fact and not be dismissed as a matter of subject matter jurisdiction.
And this, Mr. Story, you have made several references to the fact that this is a summary judgment, an appeal from summary judgment. What is the standard of review for this court? There seems to be some dispute between the parties as to how we are to review this summary judgment.
Yes, Your Honor. Initially, it's de novo. So this court looks at the record presented to the district court on summary judgment. The traditional summary judgment standard applies. This is unique. I think this may be one of the first cases in which a denial of summary judgment has been appealed interlocutorily to this court. But the principles are the same. The undisputed or the facts are to be interpreted in favor of the non-moving party here, the appellees. And summary judgment is still an extreme remedy that requires MUD on a summary judgment to present evidence that it is entitled to judgment as a matter of law. There's also a question raised in MUD's brief about Davis v. State, and that's a 2017 decision from this court. This court set out the Nebraska precedent by which MUD has the burden to prove the affirmative defense. The court in that decision decided that that affirmative defense, however, cannot be waived by the failure to raise it. However, the court explicitly reserves the other holdings in it.
An immunity is not an affirmative defense.
No, I think Davis v. State is a little confusing, admittedly. It sets out that it is affirmative defense, but it's an affirmative defense that cannot be waived. And this court in Davis v. State says overruled its precedent to the extent that it said that. But I think it reserved the rest of the precedent, which is it is the MUD's burden to prove the applicability. But that only matters, Your Honors, at trial. This is still a motion for summary judgment. And their burden is still to meet that. I also want to discuss the post-fire, quote-unquote, post-fire allegations of negligence. I think it's a misnomer to call these post-fire allegations of negligence. The actual acts of negligence that occurred from MUD that resulted in them unable to turn off the fire in a reasonable time, which resulted in the destruction of my client's entire building, as well as the building behind it, was not because they were making split-second decisions at the fire scene. First, prior to the fire, MUD failed to properly mark the line and shutoff valve. That's the same allegation with regard to the excavation. This is important. When MUD showed up to the site after the fire, they could not find the two yellow dots. In fact, not until Michael Conrad, which is one of their claims representatives, found that after an hour of being at site, did they find the proper shutoff valve. That was acts prior to the fire. Prior to the fire, MUD admittedly failed to abandon an old valve, right? They publicly admitted in the World Herald that they failed to do so. And that was a violation of their statute. Why does that matter? When he showed up, the operators that showed up on the day of the fire, they shut off the wrong valve. And when that valve didn't turn off the natural gas, it caused confusion. And as a result of that confusion, they tried to shut off every natural gas pipeline that possibly could ever go into that building instead of looking for the one that was right there in front of them. Those errors are not post-fire errors. They're not protected by the prison riot cases. Furthermore, the prison riot cases are distinguishable. MUD just wants to say, well, this is hectic, but there's no analysis or facts to support that. They had one job, and that was to turn off the valve. They didn't have alternative considerations. They're not considering the safety of their prisoners. They're not looking at policies. And there's no evidence presented by MUD that they had discretion in shutting that valve off as late as they did. The acts and omissions by MUD are operational in nature. 7623-23 is a quintessential example of a non-discretionary duty to warn. Whether MUD's warnings, dots versus lines, is sufficient is not a question that's protected by discretion. It's a question that must be resolved by the trier of fact. And so for these reasons, appellees request that the case be remanded for trial, and I will now release the rest of my time to co-counsel Tom White.
Thank you very much. Mr. White, good morning to you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning to all members of the court. I am Thomas White. I am also speaking for the consolidated appellees. The first thing that one should do in this case is actually read the statute. And the statute says the obligation is to clearly identify the location of the gas line. That is a direct, absolute directive from the legislature. And no, it does not preempt or overrule Lemke. I think the legislature properly took note of this court's decision and embodied it in a statute with more directives to make it absolutely clear that that is a direction. Now, because the law is a practical science, we don't exist in a theoretical vacuum. The statute also recognizes that how you effectively warn has to be adopted on an operational level to the situation you're facing. If a gas line is running through a wheat field, then sticks are going to be necessary. If it's running through a frequently mowed lawn, then maybe wire flags are appropriate. If you're on concrete, then certainly paint is appropriate. But what is unequivocal under every circumstance, it is an obligation, non-discretionary, a directive, ministerial duty to clearly identify a very dangerous condition. And that condition, Your Honors, has become even more critical with the rise of horizontal drilling. The reason we can have this virtual hearing is because of horizontal drilling all over the state, putting in fiber optic lines. The frequency of gas strikes has become exponentially more common, and that is well attested to by MUD employees. And these are catastrophic or potentially catastrophic events. So the legislature, taking the lesson from Lemke, said, okay, here's how you do it. Has to be clearly identifiable. And in this case, let's look at the facts. Not only is there testimony that the horizontal drilling team never saw the yellow dots, but also the firefighters couldn't find them. And then for an hour and 12 minutes from the time of arrival up to 8 NUD employees at the end looked in vain for what has a statutory obligation to be clearly identifiable. There is abundant factual questions about whether or not that statutory duty to be clearly identified has been met. Now, there is an issue in the nature of MUD's argument here that should be raised. The obligation to clearly identify instead has somehow being tried or attempted to be transformed to dots. Well, let's take it to the logical extreme. Micro dots? To paint dots in a wheat field? I mean, the law is not foolish. The law is there as a practical tool to promote progress, economic progress in public safety. And what it says is, we need horizontal drilling, but you know what? When that comes into contact with utilities like natural gas, it's dangerous, and we absolutely have to have clear warnings so society can progress. And to reduce such a common sense necessary warning to the idea that somebody can use micro dots that don't identify or warn anybody is to stand the entire statute on its head. Now, more than that, Your Honor, I would like the court to recall the manual the Council for MUD put up before it. There's a highlighted portion. But the most critical sentence immediately follows that, and it wasn't highlighted. And what that sentence says is, yeah, you know, if it offends a property owner, you can consider using less paint, basically. But then it states, the very next sentence in that manual states, quote, when there is any doubt, make sure the property is clearly marked. Now that's MUD's own manual. And this court, and as counsel for MUD acknowledged during the hearing, once it becomes in the manual, there's no question at that point it's ministerial. The discretion's done. So MUD in its own manual absolutely said, you know, conditions may require different methods to mark, but if there's any question at all, it must be clearly marked because the consequences of failing to clearly mark a gas line are catastrophic. Now,
I beg your pardon. Would you give us your view on if there are choices within a ministerial duty, does the fact of choice elevate it to discretionary?
Your Honor, I would submit.
Conversation about discretionary as a word of art in this area. Can you clarify your view, please?
Certainly, Your Honor. If we take the appellant's position that all this is discretionary, there is no ministerial. Discretion eats up all directives. If you say clearly marked, and then we have to say any particular method to clearly mark, it makes the law, it's not operable. The law has to allow for simple, common sense decisions to effect a clear policy directive. And in this case, the statute goes even more granular than the vast majority. It doesn't just say clearly identify, it says there's three methods. It says you gotta use yellow paint for gas, and it gives them directives on different situations on how it should be accomplished. This is about as clear as an effective law that will meet multiple circumstances can be in placing non-discretionary duties on the people who are to affect it. If the court starts to accept an argument that any level of decision-making is in fact discretionary and not in fact recalled it to what it has, overall social policy affecting broad implications, then no law will ever meet the standard of being ministerial. And even if we go in that route, Your Honor, if we accept MUD's argument, again, as conceded by counsel in the summary judgment hearing, they put it in the manual. Under Tadros, which is what was relied on at that time, it is clear that once it's in the manual, even MUD accepts, compliance with the manual is ministerial. And what does their manual say? I'm sorry, Your Honor, I'm out of time, if I may finish that sentence.
You're out of time, but you may finish that sentence.
Thank you, Your Honor. The manual again says, no matter what, whatever method, you must clearly mark, which means warn, of the existence of a dangerous condition. Absolutely consistent throughout with this court's precedent. Thank you for your courtesy today.
Thank you, Mr. White. Do we have time for rebuttal? 2 minutes and 7 seconds, Mr. Coyle. You need to unmute, Mr. Coyle.
One more time.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it still looks like the Brady Bunch up there. I will tell you that this, I want to make it crystal clear. Christopher Sacco was exercising the discretion given to him by company policy as set forth in guidelines that came from the highest level. If the legislature wanted to dictate the size and the length of the marks that we're supposed to use, then it would appear in the statute. It does not.
Is it clearly identifiable enough of an appearance in the statute, the fact that there is statutory language requiring clearly identifiable marking?
Yes, Your Honor. And the statute identifies the fact that paint is clearly identifiable marking. It specifically says stakes, flags, or paint, or any other clearly identifiable. So in other words, it has concluded as a matter of law that using paint is clearly identifiable. In this case, we're not going to be putting 18 inches of yellow paint in the middle of somebody's brand new patio in Omaha. They get to use their discretion. They used it here.
What if the paint could only be seen with a microscope? Is that clearly identifiable?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, I accept your question. That's not the facts of this case. There were yellow dots on the sidewalk. But the technical answer is understand, but this isn't Mike Coyle putting a swing set up in his backyard. These are sophisticated underground directional boring crews. You could have landed a B-52 on the watermark. They did not want to take up that piece of concrete. They tried to fish the underground directional boring device under it without removing the contract or the concrete, and that's why this accident happened. This is clearly a discretionary function. So we're going to get to trial and somebody says, well, it should have been this big, it should have been that big, it should have been this long. That's the very second guessing that this court doesn't want to have happen. These cases need to be dismissed. It's preempted by the One Call Act. We followed it to the letter. Now, in response to counsel's question, subject matter jurisdiction, and Your Honor, can I finish my statement here?
You may.
Subject matter jurisdiction is always the burden of the plaintiff. In this case, under the Political Subdivisions Tort Claims Act, it is the plaintiff that needs to prove that the cause of action they have filed against the political subdivision can withstand the discretionary function exemptions. In this case, they could not. We don't want that type of second guessing. That's what's going to happen if you send this case back to trial. We'd ask that you enter an order overruling Judge Byrne's decision and dismissing these lawsuits with prejudice. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Coyle, and thank you very much, Mr. White and Mr. Story. That concludes arguments in the various cases. I won't list them all, but we appreciate your participating by WebEx with us today, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Bartle. Counsel, you are excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.